The next case on which we will hear argument is actually our case number 5 for today, United States against Jermaine Cooper. Ms. Kraus.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Mr. Cooper was convicted of several drug charges and gun charges and obstruction of justice. He was represented by Tom O'Malley. Mr. O'Malley filed a motion to suppress. So it is Mr. Cooper's challenge here that his Fourth Amendment has been violated. The search warrant affidavit, which was part of the appendix which was filed by him, and shows that there's two parts to the search warrant affidavit. There was a confidential informant who was used on 4 separate occasions. The challenge during the briefing on the motion to suppress, challenged the veracity and reliability of the confidential informant. The search warrant affidavit did not present sufficient information to show that that confidential informant was reliable and credible.
But by the time the affidavit's filed, there have already been several controlled buys, right, which had been monitored by the police. I don't think we can look at that one fact that maybe they hadn't worked with this person before in isolation. We've got to look at everything.
Certainly, under totality of the circumstances, the district court was allowed to look at all of that information.
So surely, by the time you've had these controlled buys, there's good reason for the issuing judge to say, yeah, let's issue a search warrant for this place.
It is Mr. Cooper's contention that the controlled buys were, in fact, not controlled buys.
Well, that's another issue.
That's an issue that could not be ascertained until time of trial. There was no petition for Frank's hearing that was filed in this.
Well, as far as the judge knew, there was nothing wrong with him, so why shouldn't he grant the warrant?
His argument, Mr. Cooper's argument at the motion to suppress, primarily and exclusively touched upon the reliability and the veracity of the confidential informant, which...
Well, I know, but following the confidential informant, they engineered these buys. I mean, that's pretty conclusive proof that the informant knows what he's talking about, it seems to me.
Well, that's certainly what the district court found in her ruling denying the motion to suppress. During the course of the trial, there was new information which arose concerning the veracity and the reliability of the confidential informant.
But that doesn't defeat the probable cause early on. Probable cause doesn't mean you've proved everything. It means you've put together enough information to justify, if you will, taking the next step, searching the house. So even if we had some ex post standard on the validity of search warrants, we would unwind any number of prosecutions. And I'm just not familiar with that as a rule.
Well, and the position that is taken in the brief is that because of this new information that arose during the course of the trial, which could not have been known by the district court at the time, either to the issuing magistrate at the time that the search warrant affidavit was approved, or at the time that the district court denied the motion to suppress, but counsel at the time of trial did not object. He'd raised these issues or raised an issue in the motion to suppress, did not timely object during the course of the presentation of that evidence, which he so vigorously fought to keep out. And in addition, there was this new I would call it new information because it had not yet been.
What are you focusing on in particular for this powerful new information?
Which facts do you mean?
What facts do you think so undermined the affidavit for the search warrant that somehow the whole case has to be unwound?
It's a series. It's not a single fact. It is a series of facts. One of the primary facts which goes to the issue which was raised on the motion to suppress, the veracity and the reliability of the confidential informant, but the issue that came out during the course of the trial, that confidential informant, he had signed an agreement which said he would follow the rules of being a confidential informant, he would not break any laws, he would not do anything independent of what the officers asked him to do, when in fact he broke all of those rules, which goes directly to his credibility, his reliability, and his veracity. He acknowledged during the course of his cross-examination for the first time that he continued to use controlled substances the entire time that he was a confidential informant.
I don't want to be too cynical, but I suspect he's not the first confidential informant who's done that. And I don't know that we've retrospectively said that evidence had to be suppressed. It's a credibility thing. The jury will weigh whether it believes his testimony. That's fine, but it doesn't require suppression.
And I would agree if that were the only matter here, that if we're looking at a search warrant affidavit and there are things that we can take out of that affidavit because they're false or misleading, we're still left with, is there a finding of probable cause with what is left. And the first part of that search warrant affidavit, which talks about those controlled buys, relies very heavily on the reliability of the confidential informant.
But also the police, they were watching.
Well, and that's new, and that's additional information which comes out during the course of the trial testimony.
I don't see what it has to do with a confidential informant. It was an independent event that confirmed what the independent informant told him.
I guess I'm not following you. I'm sorry.
Well, you're saying that the informant is unreliable because they're relying on the fact that they did what the informant told them to do, and they apprehended somebody selling drugs.
Well, it part of what came out during
that seems to me to be a pretty powerful factor in confirming that the whatever other faults the informant may have, he was telling the truth about this matter.
Well, the other factor that comes out during the course of the trial which is not laid out in the search warrant affidavit, is that there is not the officers who are conducting the surveillance of the confidential informant each time that he's either going into the home or going into the Dove Shack, which is the bar which was involved here, I think one was at a gas station, that there were missed opportunities of the surveillance was not complete. There were audio buy, the second or third audio buy, I think it was the one that malfunctioned. Once the confidential informant was out of the sight of the officers who had him under surveillance, you have to rely exclusively on what the confidential informant, because it came out during the course of the trial that, in fact, there were no officers who could independently give testimony concerning the veracity of what the confidential informant was testifying to. And I would reserve the rest for rebuttal. Thank you.
Ms. Kirchhoff.
Good morning, Your Honors. Emily Kirchhoff on behalf of the United States of America. May it please the court, counsel. The district court did not err when it denied Cooper's motion to suppress because the search warrant affidavit established probable cause. As this court has noted, there were four controlled buys, and the search warrant affidavit went through each of the details of those four controlled buys. The confidential informant...
And two of the buys occurred at the house, didn't they?
Correct, Your Honor. The two of the buys, the confidential informant was searched beforehand, as was his vehicle. In one of the controlled buys, the officer, the affiant for the affidavit, rode in the confidential informant's car to the house, which was the subject of the search warrant. The confidential informant went in, was given buy money, and went into the home and returned with narcotics. And he was searched again. There were no additional narcotics found on the confidential informant or in his vehicle. And so those facts established probable cause that there was evidence of illegal drug activity in the residence. The police officers, the search warrant, sets forth the procedures that the confidential informant was searched beforehand, that they placed an electronic monitoring device on him, that they kept him under constant surveillance from the time that he was searched before the controlled buy until the time when they met with the police, when he met with police officers again after the controlled buys.
Now, could you remind me, this is not a situation, was it, in which the confidential informant actually appears before the issuing judge? It's just the affidavit?
It is just the affidavit, correct, from what I can tell, yes. And so there's just no, even the evidence that was presented at trial does not undermine the probable cause that was established in the affidavit. The credibility of the CI was corroborated through the controlled buys. The fact that the surveillance was incomplete is not really material because, as this court noted, probable cause is not a certainty that something is going to be found. It's just a reasonable likelihood. And here, on two instances, the confidential informant walks into the residence with money, comes out of the residence with narcotics. If there are no further questions from the panel, the government will rest on its brief.
Apparently not. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Anything further, Ms. Krause?
Just very briefly. The only additional thing that I would point out is that with regard to the search warrant affidavit, the jury acquitted Mr. Cooper of count two. That was the only count wherein there was no audio recording of any buy. I also believe that it occurred at the home. That's the one where the officer was hiding in the back of the confidential informant's vehicle, couldn't see him walk. The officer could not see the CI walk up to the house, could not hear what was occurring. I think that is very telling that the jury acquitted Mr. Cooper of that count because they had to rely exclusively on the confidential informants, and obviously he was not truthful enough beyond a reasonable doubt. I would stand then on my brief. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.